of wind that likely took the arrow off course. Paxton could take it no longer. He ran a hand through his unruly waves to get the locks out of his eyes as he walked over to the shooters.
Oi there, time to rotate.
He didn't bother with niceties. Paxton wasn't there to make friends, but he nearly smiled in amusement at their startled expressions.
We're allowed 5 shots each, one of them protested. Then get a move on, there's a bloody line forming.
The polished young men looked like they wanted to argue, likely unaccustomed to being spoken to in such a way, especially by a townsperson. Paxton stepped back and crossed his arms. He saw Tian press his lips together to keep back a grin. The men, appearing rattled, turned back toward the targets and fired off their last shots. Soon after, Tian was up.
Don't show off,
Paxton warned Tian, who sighed with disappointment. The brothers made quick work of their time at the target, angling their bodies from different positions for each shot, and hitting within the middle circle each time. Paxton heard whispers from the handful of wealthy men surrounding them, but didn't care to gauge their reactions. After they'd retrieved their arrows, Paxton sat with Tian on the stone seats by the wall, eyeing the crowd of hunters. Tian rambled on about each of them, telling Paxton snippets of things he'd overheard, mostly braggarts boasting of their kills.
That one there hunts lions down in the Kalor Hotlands,
Tian whispered excitedly, pointing to a man with what appeared to be lion hair around the sleeves of his shirt.
He had to wrestle one and kill it with his bare hands.
Paxton almost laughed.
Don't believe anything you hear from these hotheads. They'll try to intimidate.
That's a good idea, Tian thought. I could start a rumor about how we had to take down a 12-point buck on a rampage with only our daggers.
Paxton chuckled.
How about we ignore the ridiculous politics of the hunt and just kill the grizzly boar, aye?
Fine. Rob all the fun from it, won't you?
Tian said with a smile. In a way, Paxton agreed with his mother and wished his brother hadn't wanted to participate. Tian was a good hunter, but he was still naive in so many ways. Paxton understood his mother's fear for the lad, though he would never crush Tian's confidence by saying so. From what he'd heard of this beast, it was strong beyond belief, and its skin was hard to penetrate. The last thing Paxton wanted was to be distracted by worry over his brother while they were facing down the monster. But he knew Tian was capable of being serious when necessary.
High seas!
Tian shouted as he jumped to his feet and pointed.
It's the king!
Paxton shielded his eyes against the angle of the sun, and sure enough, the king was walking along the balcony with its ornate pillars of stone that overlooked the West Commons area. He was flanked by several heavily armed men. All through the commons, Paxton saw guards dispersing themselves through the crowd, eyeing the hunters.
Brave hunters of Yorona, called one of the king's advisers from the ledge above. I respectfully ask that you lower all weapons to the ground while His Majesty King Charles Lochson speaks.
Paxton reluctantly obeyed. The king stepped forward, the sun glinting off his gold crown. Paxton had been expecting an arrogant man with cruelty in his eyes, but he saw none of that. This man appeared to hunch with fatigue. His eyes, lined with dark circles, glistened with emotion. It somewhat annoyed Paxton, who didn't care for surprises. He had his reasons for not liking royalty, or many other people for that matter. Reasons he wouldn't share with anyone. Reasons only his late grandmother understood.
Welcome, each of you, to the kingdom of Lochlannoch,
King Charles said in a powerful voice. Paxton and the other men squinted in the midday sun above the king.
I am honored and grateful that so many brave men have responded to my proclamation. Our kingdom is in dire need of your expertise. Throughout the day, my men who have faced the great beast will be among your ranks to share their experiences and provide insight. Maps of the land are available. You will each be fed and housed here in these quarters until the waterlands are freed of the beast. I have no doubt that one of you will achieve this feat of greatness and reap the rewards.
A roar tore from the crowd. Tian punched the sky and hollered his own war cry. Paxton never took his eyes from the king.
And to the one who does.
King Charles paused and turned to gesture behind him, as Paxton felt the breath he was drawing stop short.
I would like to introduce you to my daughter, Princess Erity, whose hand you will have in marriage.
Was it Paxton's imagination, or did the king's voice falter? A hush fell over the hunters as a shocking beauty walked gracefully to the king's side. He put an arm around her slender shoulders, and she moved close, fitting her own arm around her father's waist, before eyeing the crowd somewhat shyly. She certainly didn't look as if she hated her father for being willing to give her away.
"I sees," Tien whispered.
Paxton stared at the girl. Like her father, she was devoid of the haughtiness he expected to see from someone who lived a life of privilege. Around her head, she wore a small golden circlet, which held a sapphire in the center of her forehead that sparkled like the sea. Her arm seemed to cling to her father with nervousness, though her face appeared assured and resolved. The princess's act of kindness was well played. A breeze lifted her strawberry blonde strands, which fell gently back against her waist. Tien whispered something else, but it was lost in the wind. Princess Arity was the very image desires were made of. Her silken cream dress was cinched at her waist, accentuating her femininity. "You don't live with the looks," his mother had always told him. "You live with the personality, so try and be pleasant, and choose a girl with a loving heart." Paxton wasn't here for the girl anyhow. He was here to kill the beast that terrorized his people. Despite whatever show the king and princess were putting on for them, he had no doubt she was a spoiled lass, probably incapable of passion for anything other than herself. Paxton would not be fooled. He would do as he must to keep his family healthy and at peace. But Caesar alive, she was sweet on the eyes. He unabashedly took his fill. As the king turned to escort his daughter from the balcony, Paxton caught his brother's star-struck eyes.
"I think I'm in love, Pax."
He grabbed his younger brother around the neck and ground a knuckle into his head, pulling hair from his perfect ponytail.
"Get off me, not the hair."
Paxton chuckled, but let out a grunt when Tien put a fist in his stomach. Tien was smiling as Paxton released him. The boy's hair stuck out everywhere.
"You always were a fool for a pretty face," Paxton told him. "And gorgeous hair," Tien added. "And perfect curves. Don't forget those."
He pulled the leather strap from his hair and smoothed the strands back again. Paxton shook his head, trying not to smile.
"She's probably as cold as the far seas."
"Don't speak that way of my future wife," Tien said.
Beside them, a group of older men in fur-lined vests and dark trousers were passing. They had beards of different lengths, and hair of dark blonde past their shoulders, some balding on top.
"Only in your dreams, little boy,"
one of the men said to Tien, making the others laugh. The man was squat and wide, like a hairy boulder.
"You probably wouldn't even know what to do with a lass like that."
More raucous laughter. Tien's joking demeanor shed and his spine straightened. Paxton stepped closer to his brother, making his loyalties known. When their eyes raked over him, their laughter quieted a fraction, but the man who'd spoken only smirked. With a jerk of the man's head, the foreign hunters walked away, talking loudly once again.
"Askamanians," Paxton murmured of the Coldlands natives. "Best not to engage them when they provoke."
"Aye,"
Tien agreed. Paxton could see the tremble of anger in his brother's chest.
"That big one is called Volgin. I've deemed him Volgin the Vulgar."
Paxton chuckled.
"You'll earn their respect in time, brother."
Tien gave a stiff nod. In the meantime, Paxton would have to remember not to put his brother in any more headlocks, or do anything to undermine his right to be there hunting. Paxton was there to kill the great beast, not to brawl with big-headed men who thought to pick on his brother, although he'd been known to do the latter plenty of times. Two Lochlann men approached then, one obviously a peasant with his threadbare tunic and mess of brown curls, the other dressed sharply in thick trousers with a military-style haircut, short on the sides, longer in front.
"I'm Samuel Gullet of Lochneck," said the peasant.
They shook hands, Paxton and Tien introducing themselves in turn.
"Lieutenant Harrison Gilfin," the other man said.
"Gilfin?" asked Tien.
"As in, related to Captain Brecken Gilfin."
A shadow passed over the young man's face.
"Aye, the very one."
Tien swallowed and glanced at Paxton to save him.
"We're sorry for your loss," Paxton said.
Samuel clapped the lieutenant on the shoulder.
He's become something of a legend, your cousin, the way he took on the beast single-handedly.
Harrison nodded, grim. At that moment, royal soldiers came into the commons area, carrying oversized rolled papers, maps of Lochlannach. Hunters flocked around the tables as soldiers pointed out marked areas where the beast had been spotted, places where people had been killed, and lands where the beast's paw prints had been found. It didn't take long before voices were raised, tension spanning like bands between the bodies, as men shouted out the areas they wished to claim.
Here.
Paxton had worked his way to the front and laid a solid finger on the strip of Oyster Bay, where the beast had been spotted most.
We should all stake these miles right here, every one of us. Our numbers can overpower it.
The thick Askamanian who'd asked with Tien earlier let out a sharp laugh.
All of us, you say? But what if the beast shows here?
Volgan stabbed a stubby finger at a northern waterway on the map.
Or here?
Now he poked a southern route.
You're called Volgan, correct?
Paxton asked the man, trying to keep calm. The bearded man from the Coldlands puffed out his wide chest and stomach, like a preening bird.
Aye, I am. And I say we break into groups and each scout different areas of the kingdom.
A few of his men grunted behind him in support.
What say you?
He shouted to the masses. Some nodded their agreement.
Volgan,
Paxton said.
If you insist on spreading out in smaller groups, I suggest that each group takes a few of the Lochlann hunters. Ho! Oh, you'd like that, wouldn't you?
Volgan bellowed.
To have your hands on each slice of the pie and take all the glory.
Fool, Paxton bit back his irritation.
We know these waterways and the lands, the best places to lay in wait. We don't need your help. Men of the Coldlands can read a map and hunt better than any in Yerona. You offend every man here by assuming otherwise.
He waved a hand over the crowd as if Paxton had purposely disrespected the lot of them.
If you Waterlands men are so valuable, then why haven't you killed the beast before now, eh? You had to call upon us to help, so leave off and let us work.
Anger boiled within Paxton, his fists tingling for rough contact. In Paxton's stewing silence, Tien spoke up.
There was a curfew instated. There was a curfew!
Volgan mocked him in a high voice, and the Askamanian men laughed. Bright red spots bloomed on Tien's cheeks. The soldier Harrison spoke up.
Some of us here have lost loved ones to this beast already. This is not about glory for us, but the safety of our lands and people. So you say, Volgan muttered, scowling.
Harrison glowered back at him.
My own cousin battled the beast and lost his life. I am here to avenge him. And bed the princess, no doubt.
Volgan's mirth was cut short when Harrison swiftly moved forward with his blade and sliced off the tip of the Coldlander's beard. Volgan watched it flutter to the ground in shock. Pointing the blade at the man's face, Harrison muttered,
Do not disrespect the princess.
Volgan's face was murderous. His fellow hunters moved in closer.
Enough!
Paxton leveled Volgan with a hard glare. As much as he enjoyed seeing the Askamanian bested by the Lochlann lieutenant, they needed to move forward with the hunting plans.
Have it your way, Volgan.
The foreign hunters would learn soon enough what they'd be battling. He shouldered his way out of the crowd with Tien at his heels. When they were out of earshot, Paxton muttered,
There's no reasoning with that load of idiots, and the rest are sure to follow him because he's the loudest.
Behind him, Paxton heard arguments breaking out over which areas the groups would take.
Perhaps he'll be eaten tonight, Tien said.
Paxton grinned mirthlessly at his brother's dark humor.
Come on, let's find a tent and rest before dinner.
In truth, Paxton didn't care for resting or eating. What he really wanted to do was hunt. Chapter 11. As Princess Arity and Lady Wyneth took the cobbled path from the castle to the West Commons gates, Arity squeezed her cousin's hand to quiet the shaking inside of her. Thankfully, Wyneth held tight in return, not seeming to mind the princess's sweating palm. Arity still felt a bit guilty after Vixie had begged and pleaded to come see the hunters, swearing she'd keep quiet despite her feelings over the situation. Arity adamantly refused. She was too nervous to handle Vixie's excitable, unpredictable personality at that moment. Ultimately, their mother had to intervene, pulling the incensed Vixie away. Arity had taken off her jeweled circlet. It made her feel like a spectacle when she wore it outside of royal galas. The girls pushed their wind-blown hair back over their shoulders as a breeze came up from the sea, swirling the bottoms of their skirts. The late afternoon was gorgeous, warm and clear, as if Mother Nature were trying to make up for the abominable beast she'd created. "You'll have to do better than that," Arity thought. Behind her, she heard the clank of swords and armor as royal guards flanked them. Perhaps Arity was naive, but she doubted the guards were necessary. She couldn't imagine any of the hunters trying to hurt her. And besides, the balcony overlooking the commons area was lined with armed guards. Her stomach flipped end over end as they gauged the sight of the long tables filled with men taking their meal. They grouped together based on nationality. Arity took in their differences, the furs and beards of the Ascomanians, the draping head coverings of the dark-skinned Zorfinans, the shaved heads and narrow eyes of the Terrestans, and what appeared to be lion manes around the sleeves of the tanned Calorians. For a group who was about to face a fabled vicious beast, they were lively and loud. Arity pulled Wyneth to a stop, apprehension and nervousness halting her feet and threatening to make her turn away. When the first man spotted her, he nudged the hunter at his side, and eyes began to turn Arity's way. She found herself standing taller under hundreds of hushed gazes. "Right then," she cleared her throat. "On we go." Wyneth gave her hand a last squeeze of reassurance and then released her, but she never left her side as they approached the first table. Arity wondered for a moment if she should keep her hands to herself. It would be the smart, safe, proper thing to do. But as she came eye to eye with the first young man at the end of the table, she found herself reaching out her hand. "Thank you for coming, brave sir." His eyes widened and he abruptly dropped the turkey leg, wiping his hand on his brown breeches. The man's skin was shades darker than Arity's, his round eyes brown, and his black curls slicked back. His hand shook as he reached out to embrace hers.
"Princessa."
She recognized the vowel pronunciations of his accent.
"You hail from Kalor?" she asked.
It took him a moment to ponder and translate her words before he answered,
"Jess."
Yes, the Hotlands. He'd traveled up from the southernmost hemisphere, a land of rainforests and smoldering humidity, from what she'd learned in geography lessons. The princess smiled at him and switched languages, speaking now in Kalorian.
"Long trip. I wish you blessings on your hunt."
His eyes crinkled in awe at hearing his native tongue come from a foreign princess's mouth. Languages were her favorite subject of study. Ascomani, Lochlannach, and most of Toresta spoke Euronan, with several dialects. But Zofrina and Kalor had their own languages. She released his hand and moved to the next man, making her way down the table. And so it went. For an hour she went through the rows, meeting each man, fumbling through introductions when particularly strong accents arose, or a hunter spoke too quickly in excitement. She'd never been more thankful for her language tutoring. Some of the men, like the first, were filled with quiet wonder, while other prideful men boasted of their accomplishments. Most were young, ranging from late teens to late twenties, though a few seemed older, widowers perhaps. Some were handsome and some were not, but she found herself grateful for each one of them and their willingness to be there. She ignored the quake of unease in her gut each time she thought of marriage and all it would entail. The sun was preparing to set as she neared the end of the last table. Only 10 men remained, all Lachlans. As she scanned a row, her eyes stuck like sap to the man at the very end. His brown hair shielded a portion of his face, but what she could see was so pleasing that she felt herself warm. His dark brown eyes met hers, and her breath stuttered. He didn't smile, nor did he nod or show any reaction. He merely watched her. Arity felt her hand going up and down as the man in front of her shook it. Tearing her gaze away from the handsome lad at the end, she gave the man from Toresta her attention. He bowed his smooth head, smiling up at her with his narrow brown eyes. She smiled back and thanked him for coming down from the ridgelands. She felt guilty, because all she wanted to do now was hurry through the next 9 hunters so she could get to the last. But as she moved down the line and looked toward the end again, she found that the gorgeous man was no longer there. Confusion and disappointment rose as she searched the area. She felt Wyneth sidle up close and whisper into her ear. "Are you looking for the skirt razor?" Erity tried not to snort at her cousin's phrase for good-looking lads, and gave a shrug. "He's by the stone risers, gearing up. Must be in a hurry to hunt." Erity wouldn't look yet. The last few men were waiting. As they moved down the line, she felt Wyneth's hand reach out and tighten around her arm. Her cousin suddenly stepped forward, asking, "What are you doing here, Harrison?" Erity gasped in surprise. Brecken's cousin, the lieutenant, raised his chin at Wyneth. He appeared as poised as ever with his brown sailor's haircut. His eyes went from Wyneth to Erity, and the princess fought the urge to run into his arms and beg him to steal her away from all this. Her handsome friend. His face remained stoic.
"I'm here to hunt, of course."
Erity's stomach plummeted. The hunt? No wonder he hadn't responded to her couriered message that week. If anything happened to Harrison.
"What about the Navy?"
Wyneth sounded ready to panic.
"They've temporarily discharged me with honor to hunt."
"But Harrison, you—"
"Don't worry, my lady," Harrison said gently.
Erity noticed that he looked upon Wyneth with an underlying pain in his eyes that seemed to match hers. Erity gently pulled Wyneth back a step, stopping her cousin from saying anything else in front of the other hunters and causing a scene. Wyneth's eyes were already glazing over, and she dropped her head, seeming to retreat into her memories.
"Thank you so much for coming out, Lieutenant Gilfin," the princess said, for the sake of those watching.
He looked as if he were holding back a smirk at her properness toward him.
"There was never any doubt when I received the proclamation, Your Highness," he said,
matching her in politeness. Erity swallowed her fears and spoke quietly so only he could hear.
"Please be safe, Harrison. I don't think your family could handle losing another."
She didn't need to add that she could not handle losing him either.
"I know."
Harrison's eyes were grave.
"But I must hunt, Air. I must try."
Wyneth pressed her lips together. As frightened as Erity was for him, for all of them, she respected Harrison's need to hunt. Erity took Harrison's hand and held on for a moment, conveying her understanding. His returned gaze was grateful.
"Let me introduce you to Samuel from Loch Neck."
Harrison gestured to the curly-haired man at his side, who appeared a few years older, with small lines creasing his eyes.
"Hello, Samuel," Erity said. "Do you have many family members in Loch Neck?"
"Only my parents, Your Highness. My wife, she died in childbirth 2 years past."
Erity's heart sank.
"I'm so sorry to hear that. You are brave to join the hunt, and you're in good company with Lieutenant Gilfin here."
Samuel nodded, shifting his weight.
"Aye, Princess. Many thanks."
Harrison gave Erity a rueful wink as she stepped away and made it down the road to the last lad. He appeared to be one of the youngest in attendance, and she couldn't help but smile when he beamed up at her with his white teeth and a boyish cleft in his chin. He bowed his head.
"Princess Erity, this is such an honor. My name is Tiern Sebald."
"Sebald, a strong Lochlan name."
She smiled when he placed a gentle kiss to her fingertips.
"How old are you, Tiern Sebald?"
17, Your Highness."
Older than she'd thought. Such a baby face.
"Same as you, I believe, Princess."
"You believe correctly. Thank you for coming. I wish you well in tonight's hunt."
"It's my honor. Thank you, Princess."
He bowed his head, and Erity now allowed herself to turn and look toward the stone wall. The handsome lad was strapping a bow across his back, and a fine, broad back it was. He checked each arrow thoroughly from tip to end before slipping it into the quiver. Erity looked at Wyneth with questions in her eyes. Should she approach him? Why hadn't he stayed at the table to meet her? Wyneth shrugged a shoulder in silent response. His back was to them. He seemed focused and determined. Perhaps he didn't wish to be distracted from the task at hand. Erity knew she should probably let him be, but curiosity burned through her. Besides, he'd obviously known she was headed to meet him at the table before he left, and she wasn't accustomed to being ignored. She grabbed her skirts, lifted her chin in forced confidence, and moved toward the risers. Wyneth was a step behind, and the guards several more behind her. She wished the guards wouldn't follow so closely. The young man's body stilled and stiffened, as if sensing their approach. "Pardon me, sir." Princess Arity was surprised at the nervous tremble in her voice. He didn't turn right away. He continued to run his finger down the last of the arrow's feathers, before shoving it into the quiver and turning to face her. She was standing a decent distance from him, but still she stepped back, surprised by the fierceness in his eyes. She didn't know what she expected. Well, that's not true. She expected a bow of his head or some other sort of respectful acknowledgement, but he gave none. The princess felt her mouth open and stay that way for far too long. The lad's eyes flicked past Wyneth to the guards behind them, and then back to the princess. "Forgive me," she found herself saying. "I didn't have a chance to meet you at the tables." High seas, her mouth had gone dry. No man had ever made her nervous like this. Why did he appear so angry? And why did every detail of his appearance appeal to her on such a base level? She felt sweat beating along her neck and spine as she made a concerted effort not to stare at the way he wore his dark tunic and breeches so well. "I'm Princess Arity." A small huff blew from his nose and his mouth quirked.
"Yes, princess, I'm aware of who you are."
Lands and seas, his voice. Wait, was that sarcasm? Next to her, she had an intake of surprise from Wyneth. Arity blinked, shaken. A lad jogged up beside them and patted the baffling, handsome hunter on the shoulder. Arity recognized the young man Tien smiling at her once again.
"You've met my older brother, your highness," Tien asked.
"Not officially," Princess Arity said. Now that the shock of their meeting began to wear off, she felt a pang of offense at the older lad's demeanor.
"This is my brother, Paxton Seabolt."
He gave Paxton another hard pat, smiling with pride.
"He's 19.
The princess held out her hand as she had to every other man, but a horrible realization dawned on her that he might refuse to take it. The very idea made her frown and stand taller. To her utter relief, he took her hand in his rough, warm one. Paxton then did something that none of the other tables full of men had dared to do. Still holding her hand, he dropped his gaze down to the swell of fabric at her chest and kept it there too long, his hand tightening and seeming even hotter around hers. Another shocked sound left Wyneth, this one high-pitched. Arity's chest sizzled under the hunter's heated attention, and she dropped his hand. In unison, the guards behind her stepped closer, one of them clearing his throat. When Paxton Seabolt's eyes drifted lower across her waist, Princess Arity refused to cower. She was torn between offense and flattery at the intimate way he took her in with his eyes, perusing at his leisure until Tien discreetly bumped him with his shoulder. When Paxton looked at her face again, he stepped back. Arity's blood flooded her system in a hot rush as they held eyes. She began. "Thank you for coming. Blessings to you both as you hunt." The princess nearly tripped over her own feet as she stood to grasp her skirts and turn, bustling through the line of guards. She heard Tien hiss, "What's wrong with you?" But she didn't dare turn to catch Paxton's response. She halted and turned when a young guard caught up and called,
"Shall I have him removed for his insolence, princess?"
"What? No, of course not." Her skin was still flushed from the feel of Paxton Seabolt's eyes. "He's a hunter. We knew some of them would be rough by nature." The guard frowned.
"Your highness, he was blatantly disrespectful."
"Enough. Gentleman or not, he's putting his life on the line. Let him be. I don't plan to get close enough to allow another moment of indecency again." The guard pursed his lips and Princess Arity turned to walk once more, catching a look on Wyneth's face she couldn't decipher. Perhaps a mix of astonishment and humor. They walked faster, putting some space between themselves and the guards. Wyneth whispered under her breath, "I'm willing to bet you wouldn't be so quick to take up for him if it had been one of the other men who ate you up with his starving eyes." "Let's not make something of nothing." Truly, heir. I thought at first you were going to smack him, and then just as quickly it looked as if you might kiss the lad. Hush, you.
Princess Arity smashed her lips together so as not to smile in her embarrassment. As they neared the venue gates, voices rose behind them. Arity turned to see men pointing out at the bay. The late day sky matched the water.
All my skies above, Gwyneth breathed.
An extraordinary Ascomanian ship was making its way to the docks. Princess Arity had only seen such a sight in books. Its wooden hull was raised high and curved at the end, like the grandest of vessels. Several light-haired men jumped from the ship to tie it, but one man with a silver breastplate stood tall, surveying the land before him. His shoulder-length blonde hair caught the breeze, and he raised his sights to the hunters now standing at the entrance to the commons. His blonde beard was cropped short, neat in comparison to the other rugged Ascomanians.
"It's Lord Leif Alvi," one of the Ascomanian men yelled.
Men from the Coldlands erupted in cheers. A lord? Was he joining the hunt or simply here to support his men? As Lord Alvi made his way up the dock, Princess Arity couldn't help but stare. Like many of the Ascomanians she'd met that day, he wore less clothing than men from other kingdoms. Ironic, since the temperatures in their lands were much lower. They must have been numbed to the elements. He wore a leather kilt to his knees, fur-lined leather boots, and a sleeveless tunic with a burnished breastplate over it. His arms, seas almighty. His arms were all muscle, bulging without even flexing. Same with his calves. And his face was chiseled as in the Coldlands tales of old. Gwyneth grasped the princess's hand as they stared. Several guards and one of the king's primary advisers met Lord Leif Alvi at the edge of the docks. They conversed for a moment, shook hands, and then led the man straight toward the princess. She and Gwyneth straightened. The king's adviser brandished a hand toward the girls and opened his mouth to make introductions. But before he could, Lord Alvi bent to one knee and lowered his head. Now that was how a gentleman greeted royalty, with civility and grace. This was the type of male Arity was accustomed to meeting, minus the kilt and breathtaking Ascomanian beauty. Given all of that, the princess was surprised she did not feel the same heat course through her that she'd felt for the rude commoner moments before. Lord Alvi stood, and his crystal blue eyes went straight to Gwyneth. He reached for her hands, and her eyes bulged.
"Princess Arity," he crooned in a low voice.
"Whoops." Arity bit the inside of her lip to hide a giggle as her cousin's cheeks reddened.
"No, kind sir. I am Lady Gwyneth Wavecrest. This is my cousin Princess Arity herself."
Her eyes were still huge as she turned a gesture toward the princess. Was it Arity's imagination, or had he appeared momentarily crestfallen as his eyes changed course toward her? He stepped over and gave another bow, taking Arity's hand. When his gaze rose to her, full of brazen confidence and an easy smile, she thought she must have imagined his initial disappointment.
"Forgive me," he said in a deep rumble of northern accent. "I was told the princess had hair like fire."
Arity smiled. Compared to Gwyneth's vibrant curls, her own hair was a sorry excuse for fire. But his eyes were far too kind to take offense.
"Nothing to forgive, Lord Alvi," the princess said, giving a small curtsy in return.
"Please, princess, call me Leif. I'm told it's not too late to join the hunt."
"You're hunting?"
Gwyneth asked. Her face paled, and she placed her fingers at her lips when she'd realized she'd spoken.
"With great joy," Leif told her in all seriousness. "I've come to slay the beast."
Princess Arity's heart tightened while she watched her cousin swallow hard, an ill look passing over her face.
"Be safe," Arity whispered. "Aye," Gwyneth said. "Blessings of the seas be with you."
The lord nodded his head in thanks, but no fear showed on his face.
"Princess and lady,"
the king's adviser said, stepping forward. He gestured worriedly toward the darkening skies.
"Night beckons. We must get you both inside."
A reminder of the dangers hidden in the dark caused the girls to sidle closer. Princess Arity turned to the horde of brave men at her back and raised a hand to wish them well. They returned her gesture, appearing as a solemn but determined bunch, and a lump of emotion lodged in her throat. Would one of these daring hunters kill the beast? Would one of these men wed her, take her to his bed? She tried to shake away the thought, but now it was her reality. She had to face it. She caught sight of Harrison through the myriad of faces. He stood naturally as if at attention, giving her a small smile and quick mock salute that filled her with tenderness. Her eyes then scanned the crowd until she found the other man she was looking for, the one who lacked respect, and yet, his attraction, at the very least, seemed to match her own. It wasn't ideal. It definitely wasn't anything to base a relationship on, but her body sought him out all the same. Paxton Seabolt leaned lazily against the stone wall, lean, muscled arms crossed over his chest, his bow jutting out behind him. When their eyes met, he didn't look away or move, causing a strange fire to zing straight into her abdomen. He'd been watching her. She sucked in a ragged breath and turned away. Arity took Wyneth's hand and headed down the path for the castle, wishing with all her might that the beast would be killed that night once and for all. Preferably by Harrison, or perhaps the brazen Paxton Seabolt. If it was wrong to have preferences, then cease forgive her. It wasn't as if her choices would be taken into account anyhow. She felt selfish for having such petty thoughts. Her only consideration should be for their safety. She sent an amended wish along the salty breeze that the man she was fated for would kill the beast, and that no hunter's blood would be shed in the process. Chapter 12. Darkness engulfed the hunters soon after the princess left. Torches were lit along the insides of the common's walls. Paxton knew his behavior had been inappropriate, but it was her own fault. He hadn't wanted to meet her. He'd chosen to leave the table because he knew he couldn't act as the others had, trying to win her approval like groveling chumps. And still, she'd sought him out, taking him by surprise and causing him to act on impulse. He raised his eyes to the skies in frustration. It would take more than a blushing princess with hair of rose gold to make him forget the teachings of his grandmother, of the injustices instated by the princess's ancestors, still blindly carried out by her own father. Oh, how civilization forgets. He wished he hadn't given the princess the satisfaction of an eye caress. He'd surely inflated her ego even further, not to mention he'd raised the notice of the guards, who seemed unappreciative of his behavior with the royal lass. So be it. The naval lieutenant sidled up next to him, wiping his long dagger to a sheen before sheathing it at his waist.
You do well not to insult the princess again.
Paxton's defenses went up. He didn't deal well with royal ass-kisses.
Didn't look to me as if she minded.
Harrison faced him.
She's a friend of mine. She's trained not to react. You've no clue what she's going through.
Paxton crossed his arms.
Aye, poor lass. Forgive me if I don't pity a royal.
Harrison's face contorted in frustration as he looked away, and Paxton felt an unusual stab of guilt. This man had lost his cousin. He'd left his duties to hunt. He didn't deserve Paxton's disrespect. He forced out the words.
My apologies, Lieutenant Gilfin.
The man stuck out his hand.
Just Harrison.
They shook, and an easy, silent agreement was made between them. Paxton would be careful to keep his opinions to himself from then on. Night awaited. It was time to put everything else out of his thoughts. All day the hunters had been at odds before finally deciding where they each would hunt. But that had been before supper, before the princess had graced them with her presence and turned the men to mush, intensifying their competitiveness. Before Lord Leif Alvey showed, seemingly the only Ascomanian with any sense. Paxton had smiled sardonically to himself when he heard the blonde lord ask his ranks,
Why are we splitting off from the other men? Have you not heard the tales of our prey?
Their stuttered responses were cut off by the sound of a drum coming from the other side of the tents. Paxton and Tian made their way over to the far side of the commons, where a fire pit had been lit, surrounded by Calorians who'd painted their faces like the night. Stripes of the mud paint went down their necks and arms. One of them kept beat on a lap drum, and the other Calorians fell into step, circling the fire. Paxton had heard tale of Calorian pre-hunting ritual dances. Now chills covered him, the beat of the drum sinking beneath his skin into his bloodstream. He watched with the other hunters in silence as the Calorians performed their orchestrated tribal dance. Together they stomped and squatted, thrusting out their spears with sharp shouts. Paxton could imagine this scene in the jungles of the Hotlands. The men finished, stabbing the sky with their spear tips. A respectful hush filled the air until the Calorians turned, ready to hunt.
Amazing, Tian said under his breath.
Samuel chuckled.
I'm ready to kill something.
Roughly 20 men from each kingdom set out, over 100 in all. The largest group, the Askamanians, insisted on hunting the area Paxton had pointed out as the beast's past stomping grounds. Paxton clenched his jaw in annoyance, but since they had the most men, he wouldn't fight it. It was smart. Sadly, the group of Lachlans fared the lowest numbers. A mere 13 of them had come, from all waterways, and 4 of their ranks were wealthy men for whom archery was only a hobby, not actual hunters. He supposed it made sense that their numbers were lower, considering many of their land's bravest men had already faced this foe, or given up hope. They left royal lands through the southern gates, passing the massive wall that hundreds of workers were diligently fortifying against the beast during the daytime, building it even higher. Pulley systems lifted heavy stones to men on ladders. Vines, a cursed burden battled by all Lachlans, covered stretches of the wall as far as the eye could see.
Beautiful, Tien muttered.
Paxton looked to where Tien was gazing over his shoulder, at the castle beyond, lit by hundreds of torches along its parapets, walls, and in the windows of High Hall, atop light grey stones of the towers, stretching high into the night sky. Paxton turned back to the path, saying nothing. They hiked over 5 miles through trees and marshland to the southern creek, where the beast had most recently killed the fishermen. 2 of the younger lads, 16 years old each, climbed into trees overlooking the land and creek. Paxton and Tien found a half-rotted log and brush pile, and they sat back to back. Their entire group was in earshot of one another. All at once they silenced, and the sky blackened. Moonlight cast shadows through the trees. Sounds of the creek and night creatures lulled them through their weight. Paxton's entire body was on high alert, and he felt Tien rigid behind him. At one point, a particularly large fish jumped in the creek, and Samuel stood with a holler, shooting an arrow blindly toward the water. All of the men stood, on instinct, only to chuckle at their own reactions. Harrison gave Samuel a joking shove, and they moved back to their places. Paxton caught Tien's nervous grin just before they hunkered down again. The 4 wealthy men began to talk among themselves, but Harrison hushed them. Hours passed, and Paxton carefully shifted as temperatures dropped. His damned ass was asleep, and his feet were cold. Tien took his lead and shifted himself too. The brothers leaned more heavily on each other, garnering body heat. Where was the beast? It had been hours. He hoped his body could quickly adjust to the change of schedule. He'd be staying up during the nights until the beast was dead, or until he was. At one point, Paxton felt Tien drift to the side and heard his light snoring. Paxton elbowed him none too gently, and Tien grunted awake. More time passed with no sign of the beast. When that first slice of soft light buttered the horizon, Paxton's gut sank with disappointment. The men stood, stretching their stiff limbs with groans and rubbing their faces. The 2 lads jumped nimbly down from the trees and cracked their necks.
That was bloody brutal, Tien grumbled.
A few men chuckled. The wealthy men looked miserable with their wrinkled trousers and muddied boots. They trudged back to the royal lands, tension hanging in the air between them. Paxton peered around at the woods, not trusting their surroundings. Day or not, the beast could be hiding, watching, waiting. It had never attacked during daylight, but Paxton didn't count anything out at this point.
Keep watch for tracks or scat, Paxton said.
All the men combed the ground with their eyes as they hiked, but saw nothing out of the ordinary. They picked up their pace as spires from the distant castle came into view. Paxton knew they were all as anxious as he was to find out what, if anything, had happened with the other groups of hunters. They entered royal lands through the heavily guarded south gates behind a line of traders with carts of goods, stating their names and homelands to the guards, each and every time they went in or out. As they headed up the cobbled path toward the castle and market, it quickly became apparent that something was wrong. Ahead, Paxton could see the shining heads of Terrestan men, with their packs stuffed full, rushing down the path as fast as they could go. Their faces were scrunched with alarm, eyes narrower than usual. As Paxton and the other Lachlan men neared, Paxton gently grabbed one lad by the shoulder to stop him.
Why are you leaving? What's happened?
The lad's eyes were wild.
He kill many. We shoot with arrow, but no work. We try dagger, but the beast...
He stopped, struggling for words, curling his fingers to show them like claws.
Too strong. Too big. To fight is no use. No man can kill. We must go.
Paxton could hardly make out the strongly accented rambling, but his insides tightened as the young man's words became clear. Samuel stepped up.
Was there any weakness shown by the beast? Anything you can tell us?
He shook his head fast, waving his arms side to side.
No, no use. It never die. Never. We go home.
Wrenching himself from Paxton's grasp, the lad ran from the Lachlan hunters to catch up to the other Terrestan men, fleeing back to their mountain homes.
There go a fifth of the hunters, Paxton thought darkly.
It must have a weakness, Samuel mumbled,
shaking his head of matted curls.
Nobody's discovered it yet, but every living thing can be destroyed somehow.
Paxton nodded. He caught sight of Tyrn's pale face as he watched the Terrestan hunters hurrying away.
Come, Paxton said. Let's fill our stomachs and talk with the other men. Then we'll rest. Later we can scout the lands to try and find where the beast keeps during daylight.
Tyrn, appearing young and forlorn with his shoulders slumped, dragged himself down the path behind Paxton. Raised voices issued from hunters inside the West Commons as they approached. Paxton readied himself for the tense scene ahead. Hungry, tired, proud, and alarmed was not a good combination. The 13 of them pushed their way into the large group surrounding one long table. Hunters from Zorfina with their loose clothing and headscarves came in behind the Lachlans, the last group to arrive. They began questioning what had happened. Voices lifted, everyone attempting to speak at once. Castle guards had entered the West Commons and spread out, eyeing their harried groups with caution. More guards lined themselves across the balcony.
Enough! Paxton shouted.
Lord Leif Alvi jumped on the table, muddied boots and all, causing all 80 men to shut up when he bellowed,
Quiet!
Leif was most definitely the only Askamanian Paxton could stomach.
Here is what we know, Leif began. 4 Terrestan hunters were killed by the beast in the night, and one is in dire condition. They were posted farthest north of Royal Lands, in a spot where, until now, the beast had never been spotted. I think it's safe to say we cannot predict where the beast will show, nor should we underestimate it. Every account says that arrows cannot break its natural armor. Its brute strength can fling away any man who attempts to wrestle it. We need to overpower it with sheer numbers, wear it down, and overwhelm it with a non-stop onslaught.
Paxton felt half his mouth lift in a grin as Leif unknowingly voiced the idea Paxton had raised the men the prior day. He ignored the glare Volgan shot him.
What say you? Leif asked.
The vast majority nodded their heads.
Very well, the blonde lord said.
He hopped down and bent over the map.
Men of Lochlannach, if you'd be so kind as to point us to the areas where our numbers could be best concealed.
Paxton, Tyrn, Harrison, and Samuel stepped to his side, the rest of their men close behind them. They pointed out the heavily forested areas that edged waterways.
Lord Alvi, Volgan said gruffly, do you think it's wise to bunch all of our ranks so closely in one area of the kingdom? What if the beast is somewhere else?
The beast goes where there's warm blood to be easily had,
Paxton answered for him.
It will find us.
Paxton and Leif locked eyes as the lord nodded, an understanding and respect forming between the two men. Volgan ran a hand over his scraggly dark blonde hair and grunted. Their discussion ended just as palace maids bustled onto the grass carrying covered platters. Tables were filled with fruits and pastries and steaming piles of eggs and sausages. Paxton was more concerned with sleep than food at that moment, but he needed to keep his strength. He walked to his spot at the end of the table. Before he sat, he glanced up at the balcony and paused, his heart giving a sudden bang. The princess, locked hand in hand with her lady cousin, was looking down upon them, appearing worried. Her hair was damp and freshly combed, heavy about her body. Both girls wore dresses that appeared simple, the princess in yellow and the lady in grey. But their fabric and stitching was far finer than anything a commoner wore, shawls with pastel rainbow beading draped over their shoulders against the morning chill. The princess's eyes darted across the men's faces until they landed on Paxton. The brightened relief that crossed her face was like a punch to his gut, followed by something pleasant and warm, a feeling that appealed to him on a deep, masculine level. Seas be damned, Paxton thought with near amusement. Princess Arity was glad to see him alive. She wore her emotions freely across her face, unguarded. She continued to surprise him, which he didn't care for. Her expression of relief was followed closely by dark shadows in her eyes at the sight of the empty seats. Her gaze moved along and halted once again. A small smile graced her lips. Paxton saw Harrison send a nod up to her, and something soured within him. Harrison said he and Princess Arity were friends, but perhaps she fancied herself in love with him. Wouldn't that be the rub for the poor princess? A cool breeze blew through. The princess dropped her head, clutching her shawl against the chill. She turned and nodded at her cousin. Together they left the men to break their fast. A wide fire pit was lit on the tent side of the commons. The hunters from the remaining four lands found themselves around it after their meal, unable to rest just yet. Chapter 13 Princess Arity had a splendid view of the West Commons from the sitting room window of her chambers above the balcony. Alone, she peered down upon the field area where the hunters exercised their skills, and the tables where the men were finishing their breakfasts. She hadn't realized how nervous she'd been for Harrison and the Seabolt brothers until she saw them alive and well this morning and experienced a current of relief. Now she found herself staring unabashedly from her window at Paxton Seabolt, wishing she had a seaman scope so she could peer closer. His movements were thought out and steady, unhurried, nothing wasted. Next to Paxton, his brother Tiern seemed like a bolt of energy, moving about, turning his head this way and that, as if keeping an eye on everything at once. The contrast between them amused Arity. Something interesting she noticed about the men as a whole was how they naturally broke into groups based on their lands of origin. She understood the comfort level of similar culture and language, but it seemed a shame that the men rarely interacted, except to fuss over that blasted map. She imagined they could learn a lot from one another, but what did she know? Men were strange creatures. The cloudless sky was bright blue, and Arity longed to be out in the autumn breeze, feeling the sun on her skin. Trees beyond the commons were beginning to turn shades of yellow, orange, and maroon. From the corner of her eye, she noticed movement along the northern corner of the commons wall. Panic welled inside her as she leaned to the window and stared at the place where a lone spruce tree was shifting against the wall. Behind it was movement again. Then something dropped down into the commons area. She jumped to her feet in panic, although this creature seemed too small to be threatening. Then she caught a flash of red curls. Donabin! Arity gathered up her yellow skirts and raced to her chamber door, quickly changing from her house slippers into leather walking shoes. She rushed down the main corridor to the exit where two guards stood. Donnie sneaked into the West Commons, Arity informed them. The two men shared looks of frustration. Donabin was a master escape artist. Arity moved between them. One guard stayed behind at the door, while the other followed her. By the time they burst through the gate, startling the guards there, Donabin was entertaining the crowd with his stunts. Arity rolled her eyes. The men laughed and clapped as the prince did a front flip, keeping his bow tucked tight in his arms. As he landed, he shot off an arrow, which lodged in the farthest circle of the target. She wanted to wring his little neck. It wasn't safe for him to be wandering about the royal lands, and he shouldn't be distracting the hunters. Perhaps she could embarrass him into learning this lesson. Arity squeezed in among the group and put a hand on her hip. Still not taking the time to aim for the center, Donnie. At the sound of her voice, the men turned their heads in surprise. Arity pretended not to notice how Paxton stood with his arms crossed, and Tiern grinned next to him, nudging his brother, who watched her closely. The group of men chuckled at her teasing. Donovan's face paled to a point that made his freckles stand out more.
How'd you find me already, then?
It's hard to hide that head of yours. Again, the surrounding men laughed. Arity grinned and moved forward, ruffling his hair. Back to the castle. You know it's not safe to roam. Donovan threw his head back dramatically and groaned his protest.
Ah, scallywag, Harrison said,
crouching menacingly in front of Donovan, who grinned. The boy attempted darting aside, but Harrison caught him and tossed him easily over his shoulder. The guards were already surrounding the prince, prepared to take him by force. They were accustomed to his antics. Donovan saw the guards from his high place on Harrison's shoulder and began to grasp for an excuse to stay.
Wait! First show the hunters how well you can do the trick!
He pointed at the princess. Harrison swung around to face her. Arity's mouth dropped open and her face flamed as every man turned to her with raised brows. She released a breathy laugh.
I think not.
Yeah, princess, said Harrison, lowering the prince but holding his shoulders.
Show us.
Arity shot him a pleading glare which only made him grin. The widower Samuel and the handsome lad Tian nodded. This could not be happening. There's no way she'd flip for a crowd of men.
I'm in skirts, she muttered lamely. It's not proper. Come along, Donny.
Lord Alvi gave a loud laugh, flashing his white teeth at her.
Ah, I don't believe she can do it.
His men chuckled. Arity knew he was only being playful, but the heat crept further up her face. The Ascomanians began to chant,
Show us! Show us!
And soon the other men joined in. Arity wanted to crawl over the wall and hide. She'd only done that silly trick in front of her siblings and cousins during the many hours they spent cooped up in the castle together. But the hunters' smiling faces were filled with the hope of a moment's entertainment to take their minds off the recent day's disappointments. Perhaps she could do it, just once. A tight smile pushed its way upward, despite her humiliation.
Fine, but I must change. Lieutenant Gilfin, don't let that little fox out of your sight.
She pointed to her brother. Harrison patted the boy's shoulders. Everyone cheered as Arity huffed in a breath and turned to leave, shaking her head in disbelief at what she was about to do. Her blood thrummed in nervous anticipation. 10 minutes later, she found herself peeking around the gate, partially hidden by the myriad of vines woven through the metal bars. She hoped to find that the men had forgotten her silly agreement and gone back to their own business. No such luck. They were standing in the sunshine, in the exact same places, many of them with their arms crossed, waiting, expectant, chatting contentedly among themselves. Blast that, Donny. She ought to whack him with a whalebone. Behind her, Arity heard quick, light footfalls and panting breaths. The princess turned to see her sister and cousin, their faces pink from running. Wyneth wore her grey skirts, but Vixie wore trousers like Arity and held her bow. My word travels fast, Arity thought.
Do Mama and Papa know you're out here? Arity asked her sister.
Vixie lifted her chin.
I don't care what the king says, but no, they don't know.
Arity fought back a smile. Their parents would know soon enough. Arity was still nervous about having Vixie near the hunters, for several reasons, but she realized allowing Vixie to participate would take a fraction of the attention off herself.
All right, then. Well, you'd best hurry, Wyneth said. If the queen finds out her children are flipping through the air with arrows at the ready in front of all these hunters, we're all in trouble.
With a deep breath, Arity led the way into the commons and the men cheered. She felt foolish, like a performing monkey from her grandparents' former circus days, improperly dressed, no less. But it was too late to back out now. With all three royal children in the West Commons, guards poured in, lining the crowd. Arity spotted Mark's men from the castle rooftops and balconies, moving to get a better look at the spectacle below. Fantastic. She refused to look around and see if the man Paxton was watching. If he wasn't, then he was the only one. It would be her luck to fall on her face in front of everyone.
Let's get this over with, she muttered to herself.
Louder, she said to her siblings, Line up beside me, facing your targets. We go on my count. The sun was high in the sky, surrounded by wisps of cottony clouds. Despite the cool fall breeze, Arity was warm enough to break a sweat. Men shuffled around them as the two princesses and the prince stood in a row with Arity in the middle, their quivers with single arrows fit tightly over their backs. Arity did not look toward the crowd, though she felt their eyes on her. She'd taken